are listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. Here's the deal. I would expect a righteous train wreck this morning. Things are looking iffy at best.
It's on the way.
Now here's what
feel it.
Here's what Ben said. Ben said to me, I said, Ben, we're going to try to run the show without you. I said, what do I have to do exactly? And he said, whatever you do, don't try to play the opening. I will put it in later. There's no way you're going to pull this off right.
Yeah, right.
And then
you tried to do it.
The pride monster, Mike, says, I could play this opening. Ben's not running a whole magic workshop back here. He thinks he's some kind of Wizard of Oz. I got this handled. And I totally came in. I don't know how to mute anybody. And so everybody's talking during the opening. I forgot to turn on the thing so you can even see it. It's, so far, it's a righteous disaster.
You're the worst.
So anyway, if you're listening on the podcast, though, things are running smooth as an old up whale.
Right.
So I would be excited for today's show. And here's the deal: we got people coming in as guests. Joining us for the first time on the show is Cody McCormick. Cody, how are you?
Doing fantastic.
See, yeah. So far we're rocking. So here's what
like
we got:
an oiled up whale.
Well, you don't say that.
No, nobody says that.
That's in the repertoire.
Yeah, that's going to be added.
All right,
it's a Mike-ism.
We have an article that I want to get through. Booba's got an Ask the Pastor.
I do.
We got some Dear Live from the Path.
Yes, indeed.
And so just for a heads up, I don't know whether we're going to hit this right off the crack, but we might. There's an article on my favorite website, beliefnet.com, called Six Things Christians Like to Do That Aren't Biblical. So I'm excited for this for a couple reasons. Right off the crack, I'd like to know if, like, to see what's on this list and go, you know what, I really do enjoy that.
Right.
Now that you bring it up.
Maybe there's some new things you can start.
Yeah, I'm super worried that I'm going to be shamed six times over after we read this article.
Also, the picture on beliefnet.com to really suck you in appears to be a couple of glasses of whiskey, which I'm not really sure if they're impending that this is not a good thing.
I mean, there was
the wrong brand.
There was no whiskey at the time of the Bible, so it makes sense that that's not in there.
Wait a minute, is that true, though?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Where did whiskey come from?
Whiskey's corn, right? and
you're
rye.
There was no corn in the Bible.
Hold up, the alcohol that they were having at that time was wine because it was the only thing they would ever ferment, and mead.
And barley.
But like, yes, but they weren't fermenting stuff like that to where we have like legitimate whiskey.
How do you know that? Yeah.
Because whiskey is not.
I don't believe you.
Hold up, Dan.
Whiskey,
I think they ferment everything.
Whiskey is not just fermented; it is then aged in barrels.
Right.
And so until you have casks to be able to do that kind of stuff.
Are you saying they're archaic and can't do that?
People that are, so that stuff sat in stone jugs and all that stuff. It didn't age from the barrels.
That's like just like grain alcohol.
Yeah, you can have alcohol, and there were also not stills. So like that's why they had wine, but they didn't have like.
No, here's the deal. There's some wild man in Bible times that put a big pile of corn and just stared at it.
That's true.
Like, come on.
That's true.
Again, you're not going to actually get the proof of alcohol that you need from that. You need stills for that.
Well,
it's not
that,
just
Booba.
Fermentation.
He was first in the guy making the whiskey.
You asked a question. I'm answering the question. There's a difference between things like wines and meads, which are natural fermentation of alcohol process, and there's things that require distillation.
I believe it's Solomon
spirited
who
liquors.
Said, there's nothing quite like a good bourbon and a cigar.
Bourbon is an American thing.
Yeah.
Well, I could be wrong.
Secular Solomon, that is Solomon.
All right. That's from the book of Jack Daniels.
All right. Let's get to this article. Six things that Christians like to do that aren't biblical. Some of us are guilty of more than one item on this list.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no. All right. Here we go. Beliefnet.com says, the Bible is full of wisdom, but is often misquoted and misunderstood. The same goes for Jesus' words. While the teachings of Jesus only lasted around 3 years prior to his death, in that short amount of time, a tremendous world of truth, myth, legend, and superstition was built around him. Even though Christians share a particular set of beliefs that they hold as essential to their faith, I don't know that we've gotten along with that one for a long time. There are a wide range of interpretations and opinions when studying the Bible. Today, readers and carriers of the message often hear particular verses and passages in ways that they were not intended to be heard. That's interesting. That's a side note. Put that on the side note list.
Done.
While the Bible is often quoted, is just as often misquoted. There are also a number of things that Christians will say or do, blah, 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 blah. Here we go. There are six things that Christians like to do that aren't biblical. Number one, say things that are not in the Bible. Now, here's the thing, boys.
Is that like when you quote the Bible, but
I don't
say
know.
This is in there?
In the list of things.
Or, like, because I say a lot of things that aren't in the Bible. But
I would say 99% of the things I said today.
Yeah. What a great argument structure. Six things that Christians do that aren't from the Bible. When they say things that aren't from the Bible, that's so unchristian.
I'm sure they're talking like the God helps those who help himself type thing. Like
they God don't bless no mess, Dan.
What?
God don't bless no mess.
That's right. See, that's got to be his t-shirt. It's got to be in the Bible.
That's true. Like cleanliness is next to godliness. Like how many of these things?
I think that was Franklin, wasn't it?
I was going to say, wasn't that Benjamin Franklin?
Yeah, here's the thing. But like a lot of that does show up. And yep. a lot of people lean on them. Like they're not totally, you know, way off base. They're not biblical. Like, but sometimes people just want a thing to grab onto. We were talking about this a little bit last week where we were talking about, like, it is not unreasonable to think that merely because of the language the Bible uses, I don't care what translation you're using, right? The way that it's phrased and because of the time that it was written, a modern brain just struggles a little bit to grasp, you know, some of it. Yeah. And a lot of it is metaphor, and a lot of it is written to be comparisons and things that are culturally understood in the time. And so some examples that like were a real, like they would waylay the crowd if you said it back in the day, you say it today and they're like,
we're getting it in multiple translations since, and like totally different language structure and stuff like that. I was just reading about like a parable that Jesus talked about with the parable of the tenants in Matthew 21, and then goes on to the stone that the builders rejected. Apparently it was a really cool thing that might have been a showstopper, because like the word Ben means son and the word Aben means stone. And so like he was like, the Ben that was rejected is the same Aben that will become the cornerstone. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, basically the same word. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And we just completely flat out missed that entirely, because it just doesn't mean anything in our translation.
Yeah. Same thing. Like I was, when I was a wee man, I was always blown away by this bar Jesus. I'm like, that's bold. Like you just put the bar in front of your name, all of a sudden, and Jesus, you borrowed like the Christ's name. Like Jesus is like the most common name when Jesus is tooling around.
Right.
I have no idea this is true. Like I just thought there was one Jesus.
Right.
And then like this dude would just be like, I'm Bar Jesus. Or like what was the big one? Barabbas. Like it was his name is actually a son of a man or son of a dad. Like when his name translates, it couldn't have been a more generic name. Like, because the bar is the son of a man. The bar is the son of, and then like Abbas or Abba, father.
Abba,
right?
Father.
Like,
yeah, son of the father.
Like, his name is literally son of a father, which couldn't be more of a literary, you know, archetype of like a nothing dude.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and so like it's stuff like that that like Ben always says, like the Bible peels like an onion, and it ain't no kidding. Like the things that we miss. Like merely because like we're not from that culture and the language got translated a little bit, and like we do, it's to our detriment, right? But it is extremely eye opening when you get to that, some of that stuff.
I mean, it's just natural. I mean, I've been on this kick lately. Well, I'll see some TV show that like I've never actually watched, or maybe I know my mom watched when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I saw like Doris Day. I remember I've heard of it. I remember the song. I don't know anything. So I watched episode one. Well, it's a whole different world back then. I mean, that's only been 50, 60 years. I don't know when it was. And you go back 2,000 years, things just change. I mean, meanings change, culture change, all the nuances of all the phrases, everything. So, I mean, we can't even go back 50 years and get it totally. We have to put it in context, but we can do it because we're not that far off. But
I feel the same way anytime I see anything from Al Bundy. Like Al Bundy from a long time ago. Yeah, everybody's like, get it, Al. And I'm like, that's the most chauvinistic crap I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, what are you talking about, you schmuck? And people are like, oh. And the like studio audience is clapping. And No.
That's classic.
No, okay. we didn't discuss the laughter.
Sayings that aren't in the Bible. So the headword is, in Psalm 119:16, David promises God, I shall delight in your statutes. I shall not forget your word. In Deuteronomy 11:18-19, God encourages the Israelites, you shall therefore impress these words of mine on your heart and soul, and you shall bind them as signs on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall teach them to your sons, talking of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk along the road, and when you lie down, and when you rise. As believers, we know we are to study the Bible, memorize it, and obey it. But the Bible doesn't always say what we think it says. And there are a number of phrases that sound like they come from the Bible, they don't. God left us the Bible as a written testimony of his word. His truth is found in the Bible. Some sayings are simple rewordings of biblical truth, but others are dangerous heresy.
Oh boy.
Despite how clever or even edifying a quote may be, if it isn't in the Bible, we have no guarantee that it is the word of God. Here's the thing. It's like, that is true,
yeah,
but that doesn't mean it's not helpful. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, when they want you to be, you know, cleanliness is next to godliness, right?
Like, yeah.
It's not in the Bible, but...
Clean your friggin' room.
I mean, it is nice.
Just clean yourself, clean your room, right? Like...
I think, like... I mean, I do this all the time, right? Like when you're trying to relate something to somebody, like we say garbage in, garbage out, right? Like what we're saying is if you're going to take in nothing but garbage, you're going to put out nothing but garbage. Yeah. That's not in Deuteronomy. But that doesn't mean it's not helpful of something to know.
Be you faithful know, now in the means, God will handle the ends.
Right, yeah. And like there's all kinds of things that the Bible points to, you know, and if you were going to take the amassed teaching of the Bible, right, as a full story from beginning to end, there are things that it is saying that it didn't say so implicitly, you know. And so, like, all those things are good to say and are okay to put together in a phrase without being accused of heresy. But right. We see this a lot in worship music, right?
Yeah, right.
So, like, there's to be fair, some of this is true, right? Like, I think over the last 5-10 years – especially, you've seen worship music kind of take a turn to where it is so individually focused. One, that's a Western Christianity thing for sure. Mm-hmm. And two, honestly, like I sometimes have a hard time praying through it. Like I'm pretty good about keeping up. I do the Lectio 365 every day. Right, there's an app, and it's really good for praying. Like especially there was a time in my life when it was just integral to me connecting with God, and I loved it. And I still do it like every day in the morning and at night. And then sometimes like it's just very me focused. And sometimes it feels a little disingenuous, you know, like I don't want to live the rest of my days and only be praying for me, you know, and like to not being able to think about those around me or taking it or have a pastoral like view on how we're, it can't always be me, what's going on with me. That's not even really the story that the Bible paints. Like we read that when we do the Lord's Prayer, right? We do give us this day our daily bread. That's a communal prayer. That's not just for you as an individual. It's you as a community. We're praying together as a community, that prayer. And we take it and very much individualize it. And so, you know, to the article's point, like there is a dangerous, it's not dangerous, but it sure is not helpful. A little bit misleading way that you turn some of these things around. But overall, just because you're not quoting the Bible, I don't know that you're in some kind of problems, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yes. I think it depends on how much weight you're putting on it. It's just a phrase I'm saying. It's a teaching. I mean, it's part of nudging people along in a positive way. Well, great. You use all kinds of tools, but if, as long as you're not like, thus saith the Lord, godliness is next to cleanliness.
Thus saith. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Thus saith. Here's the thing is like, even when I think that I've heard from the Lord about something, I am real careful. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm like, I need 4 more people to tell me they heard that too, or I'm not moving on it.
Exactly. Now, I think
throw the fleece out.
It's almost a little different on a personal level, right? If it's about me or like if I've been praying about something and I feel like God is leading me in a way, that one, there's not as much risk to it, right? Because, like, even if I screwed it up or it was just my own mess, I have a father who loves me, right? I think he's going to save me from well-intentioned whatever. I don't envy. I know a couple, 3 people in my life who, like, I would certainly designate as prophets. Like, God speaks to them and they come looking for people. Like, not in a, like, you almost have to drag it out of them unless God's really, pushed it to them. But, like, I don't envy that job. That would be a tough job for me because I feel like I would be so afraid of speaking on the Lord's behalf. Have you ever had a prophet speak into your life?
Had a prophet speak into my life?
Yeah.
Yes, I think so. And it's usually to call me out on stuff that I'm absolutely hearing, but I'm not moving on. And it's humbling when it happens because I'll be thinking something, but then I just don't trust the origin of it because I don't trust myself. Not that I don't trust God at all. It's just like, I'm a terrible sheep. I may not recognize the shepherd's voice, but not because the shepherd's messed up. It's because of me. But then something will come along where it's like, yeah, you know how you've been hearing that? That's been real the whole time. I'm like, crap. Okay. All right. I guess I got to move on that now. So I'm going to go ahead and do that.
Would you say it was in a way that like it wasn't real obvious behavior, right? Like if you came in here with a big old jug with 3 X's on it and going hook up, you know what I'm saying? Like I don't have to be a prophet to be like
Boobas and Alky.
Yeah. I feel like your sauce is becoming a problem.
No, and it wasn't like, it wasn't just like calling out sinful things. It was like the things that I recognized that I needed to be doing that just something was blocking me from doing. Whether it was work and ministry that I should have been doing or following along with how God was using me, but I was just holding back because I didn't feel like the right person for it. It was people speaking in my life going like, yeah, no, you'll never be the right person for it. You'll be the one who God calls, and then he's the right God for it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Cody, you ever had something like that happen to you?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, over the last couple of years as I've come to faith, right, I think I definitely had those things that Bubba was just talking about, right? Those thoughts in your head and those things that you just don't act on. And then finally somebody just grabs a hold of you by the nape and was like, come on, man, you got to do this, right? And I think that was God putting people in my lives to do that and intentionally doing that so that it could draw me towards them, right? I mean, that's what I needed in my life. That's what God needed for me. So, you know, and then just to that point, you know, about just putting people in your pathway to be able to pull you into things and to for the outreach for that, you know, working with the youth group and all of that stuff, right? Yep. It's that pushing and that, man, I know I need to do it.
Yeah.
Right. But it's that person that God's just putting it on them to drag you into it, right?
Yeah.
I say drag you into it, but I love every minute of it.
And most of the time, they don't feel like they're dragging you into stuff. They're just like, hey, man, God's been telling me this. Yeah. And, like, I listen to him and say what he says that I'm supposed to say. And so I need you to own up on that. And I'm like, crap.
Right. Like, dude, I'm not that smart of a person, right? So sometimes you got to, like, hammer me on it. So
look me in the face and be like, Bubba, this. And I'm like, crap, okay, fine.
Yeah.
I feel like I've had it a couple times where I'm like, people say something to me. I'm like, why did you say it like that?
Yeah. Yes.
That's always the time.
So
that
eerie.
Know, right? Like, if for some reason, it's very similar to the way that the Holy Spirit arouses, like, stuff in the scriptures, right? When you're reading a verse you've read 1,000 times, and then for some reason, it's like just sticking with it. And you're like, what is this about? And, like, that's generally when I can put together, like, why did you I hear what you're saying to me, but why did you phrase it like that? That's an odd, you know, way to phrase it, because it's just in fact, it was probably within the last year. I was driving to church or something, and I remember just thinking to myself, I'm like, I have not been very faithful about being in God's word and pursuing, like, holiness. And, like, I can't imagine the last time that I've walked up to somebody and said, are you pursuing holiness? Right? It's just, I'm like, how's your walk with Jesus? Like, are you reading the Bible? Are you praying? What's going on with you, you know? But I would never phrase it as pursuing holiness, you know?
Yeah.
And I walked into church, and then this gal looks at me, and she's like, I need to talk to you for a second. I'm like, oh, man, usually when this happens, I'm in some kind of trouble.
I'm in trouble.
You're running back through your mind, like, what?
Right, exactly. Yeah, what sin have I not confessed yet?
And she goes, hey, listen, I don't know if this is going to come as a surprise to you, but for the men in this church to do what God is asking them to do, they need to be in their scriptures and they need to be pursuing holiness. And I'm like, oh, man. I mean, that was just
ding, 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 ding.
I'm like, okay. I'm like, I heard the same thing. So I'm with you.
That's funny.
That's what we're doing. And, like, I was so thankful that she was willing to do that, right? First of all. And second, because what it feels like that a creator God of the universe knows you. When that kind of stuff happens and you can look at it and go, like, you didn't have to do that. You phrased it exactly in my head as you would have it come out of somebody's mouth to say, son, I'm paying attention to you.
Yep.
You know? Dan, you ever had a thing like that?
I have. It's been rare, and it could be rare mostly because I don't trust people. I've had a lot of people who were frauds who, you know, the Lord has told me, it's like, all right, already, and I'm like, no, okay, I'm not listening. Oh, I mean, I'll listen, but you know. But one time, I met a guy for lunch, and he was traveling through town, and we just sat down, and he's been like a mentor to me, you know, over the years. And he just said, hey, how are you with God? You know, and that's all it was. And I mean, I just squirmed. Everything was fine. I wasn't like, you know, robbing banks or anything the side. Or, but I sat there and I just gave all the super generic, oh yeah, we're good. You know, great. Potato salad's good here, isn't it? You know, and it was like for 2 or 3 days, I sat there and thought about, like, man, how really are we, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I've kind of drifted, you know, like, I'm doing my job, I do my stuff, I check my boxes, but that's, I'm checking boxes, not pursuing holiness, you know, and that really hit a time of personal revival for me. And then there are times since then that I bring that up myself, you know, like, okay, come on, dude, really, how are you in God?
Yeah.
And oftentimes I just get stuff from God straight, like we talked before the show, I was going to drive him home from Kentucky, and he's like, hey, what about this book you haven't read for 20 years? I'm like, what? Okay.
I guess didn't know so. I still had that.
Throw it on.
Yeah, I mean, I just found it on YouTube, you know, and let someone read it to me.
It's so funny.
And it's been, I've got a little revival going on in my little life right now, just of some stuff that, okay, yeah, sometimes you get caught in the mundane and you forget that it's the prayer stuff going on behind the mundane that's creating some giant,
yeah,
you know, waves throughout the spiritual world.
Yeah.
And we're just like, yeah, okay, I prayed, you know, and I don't know. So there's a combo. Usually I get it straight from God. That's how, I don't know how it sounds like, but there have been times it's been people that use, but maybe I wasn't listening, you know, and he's like, okay, I'm going to bring in support, buddy, because you're kind of lame. And so
I feel like I just heard some.
Just like right now?
Yeah, shoot. Okay. I got to fix something. I read Fresh Wind, Fresh Fire.
Yep.
And I read that book in one shot. Like, I started it and I did not put it down until it was done. Mm-hmm. And it was freaking great. Like, that book was incredible. And it just, like, it lit a fire in me. No pun intended. But, like, ever since then, I've thought to myself, on Thursday evenings, I need to be at the community center of my apartment complex praying. And I'm not going to invite a single person to that. And I'm not going to, like,
I've been. I'm just going to start. I'm going to pick a night and just start doing it.
Right. And that's right. Exactly. I'm just like, and every part of me, like the prideful beast that I am sometimes that I have to fight down would go, invite your church, invite a bunch of people, put it up on the Nextdoor app, do whatever, all this different stuff.
And,
and here's the deal. Like, you guys know me. I'll do that. And then people will show.
Uh-huh,
like,
sure.
People will absolutely show up to that. And it's whatever. I don't even know why it happens, but it happens. But like, I so don't want that to be the Boova show. Like, I just want it to be like, I want to be in that room. So that, like, every single person that shows up and is just like, either what are you doing or can I join, is 100% not me flocking people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, I had a feeling that somebody was in this community center praying, and here I am, and now I'm going to do it. And, like,
talk in 2 months and see what happened.
Here's the deal. You were just saying that, like, dang it. Thursday nights, like, it just hit again. I'm like, I've been thinking that since I read that book 6 months ago, maybe 5 months ago now.
Yeah.
I thought I should be in there on Thursday nights, and I have not done it once. And it just hit me again that I'm like, hey, Boova, guess what? You still have got nothing going on Thursday nights, and all you would have to do is walk 300 feet out your front door. And, like, even if I ask you for more than that, what's too much? And it's like, oh, crap. Okay, fine. All right. I got to be there on Thursday night.
Yeah, actually, I'm reminded of just a quick story. Like, I was just thinking about two things. I had read Fresh Wind, Fresh Fire, I think, within the last year, right? And, like, I was I'm always extremely convicted when I read that book, because it just reminds me of the power of prayer.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like, an enigmatic speaker can grow your church. People will show up for the worship. But if you want to know the real health of your church, you look at Tuesday prayer night.
Prayer night, yep. Mm-hmm.
That's what you look at. And you go, this is where God's moving, right? And so I was reminded, because when I was going to run youth group this year, I said, you know what? I'm not planning anything.
Yeah.
I'm going to invite the Holy Spirit in, and we are going to pray every Wednesday for what we're going to talk about. And I had more trouble this year with not like coming up with a lesson, not with stuff to teach, right? But with, like, spiritual evil trouble, like trying to tear the place up, than I've ever had in my life.
Attack.
Running youth group.
Yep.
Right. And I've ran youth groups probably 15 years now. And this year was a Mack truck of a year. It was just rough.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the year, we take this big picture, right? And, like, almost none of the kids in our youth group are churched, right? And there's more kids in this youth group than started the year with.
Yeah.
Right? But getting there was rough. And I was praying about it before the last one. I'm like, Lord, I don't even know how we got here. Right? And, like, we had so much trouble this year. And he goes, you invited me to show up. That's what happens. Because there's something worth fighting against. Right?
Yeah.
Like, you can run it like a boilerplate youth group with, you know, you can watch The Chosen every other Wednesday and then, like, give out a bunch of candy. And, like, I think there is value in community building that way. Right. So don't hear me wrong here. But, like, you invite the Holy Spirit to show up and say, we're here to do work, and we're here to let you do work to us. Mm-hmm. I would expect some trouble. And boy, we sure got it. Right. But I thought, if I hadn't been praying for that, I would have missed all of that because I have no idea what that looks like in 30 years for any of them, right? I just know it was a rough year. That's what I know, you know? And then the second thing was, is I was remembering the times in my life, like I still do rocks, right? I write on rocks and I put them in my windowsill. I put them, whatever. They're like little mini Ebenezers to remind me of things God has done. And I was looking at one particular rock and I'm like, why was I even there doing this thing? You know? And I remember because I was sitting at work and I felt like God was saying, you need to go to this location and pray. And I'm like, it's the middle of the workday. And what does it matter? Right. You're the God of the world. You're the God of creation.
Right.
Why do I have to go there?
Right here, right now.
Right. And I'm like, I'm not going, you know, so here I am for 20 minutes, not working anymore. And just going, I'm not leaving. It's like 1:30 in the afternoon, you know? And then at 1:50, I said, fellas, I got to go. And I left and I went and prayed at this place and God showed up. Like he just showed up in an amazing way. And I'm like, I can't count how many times since then that God has told me to do something and I dismissed it, like Thursday prayer meetings. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, the thing is if I look at a time in my life where I'm like, there's not very many rocks coming from the last 6 months. And then I think back and think how many times I ignored the Holy Spirit asking me to be part of a rock event. And then I said, I don't know. I'm good where I'm at. And then I think, you fool, like this is God. This is not God not being faithful. This is Mike missing out on an invitation to be part of a rock, to be part of a cool event, you know? And so like we wrap all of this stuff together in a big old thing that says, look, it is very important when you're dealing with works of the Holy Spirit and people speaking prophetic words to you, right? That they are rooted in the Bible. God's character is God's character. And he does not act outside of his character.
Right.
You know, but just because it is not word for word out of the Psalms or Micah does not mean that God is not interacting with you in some way. It's way more of a character thing than it is a specific word thing, especially because it's possible the Lord doesn't speak in the NIV. You know what I'm saying? Maybe he doesn't use the exact phrase that you took in. You know what I'm saying? So, okay, that was number one.
I was just about to say, one of six.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Let's keep going on that one.
Well, we're
going
to move on because then these next ones are laughable. Number two, part of the six things Christians like to do that aren't biblical. Number two, read horoscopes to determine future events.
Have you ever read a horoscope?
Do you know what your sign is? I have no idea. I couldn't tell you.
I mean, I used to read it in the paper when I was
an Aquarius.
13. I'm a Pisces, bro. Come on.
I knew it had to do with water.
Yeah.
I don't know any. Well, here's the thing. I know people who are Christians that do this.
Oh, for sure.
But I don't understand it.
Oh,
like,
gosh.
At all. So.
Yeah, I can't. I don't understand either. It's like, wow, I really find myself drawn to some associate's degree person that's writing this horoscope into your news column that literally they get paid $30 a pop to just go and drop that in there for you.
To tell you you're going to have a good day.
Yeah, to tell you you're either going to have a good day or you're going to have a bad day, or why you're going to have a bad day is because of how bad you are, or the other astrological signs that are nearby you may be causing you issues because the Taurus does not fit in with a Leo. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks. I'm glad to know that because I was born in a certain time that I am now connected to that constellation, which is man-made situation there, that we're just going to be like, yeah, that's great. I love that.
Yeah,
I love Jesus too. I don't get that.
My mom used to read those, and I was like, "Mom, don't read those." And
it's almost comical, really,
yeah.
Because you know what the horoscope never does is tell me something I need to change about myself, right? Nor the fortune cookie, right? Like these are two apparatuses where people are like, "You'll never guess what I got as a fortune cookie." I'm like, "I bet I can. I bet it was very supportive of whatever you're doing, and you're great."
I mean, I will say I've
jammed that square peg into a round hole because of that horoscope today or that fortune cookie, right?
I've had a fortune cookie with no fortune in it that really told me a lot about my life. I was like, did I get a blank? Like, yeah. What does this mean? Somebody was like, that's really bad luck. I was like, oh no, I need to get out of this Chinese buffet stat.
Maybe you make it up yourself. Fortune can be whatever you want it to be.
Either that
point,
or
right?
The fortune was, Booba, right? Get out of this Chinese restaurant right now. You've been here long enough.
I've done told you.
I've done told you before.
Here's my question. The people that are reading the horoscope to get the future events, how many of them actually read about the future events, right?
Harold Camping is better than a horoscope.
It's
all in the book, right?
Yeah.
It's all in there. What's going to happen?
Exactly.
Future events.
And here's the thing is like overall, like I, people will look for hope from anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? And without the hope of Christ, I get it. Like, you're trying to fix yourself with medicine. You're trying to fix yourself with exercise. You're trying to fix yourself with your beauty regimen. You're trying to fix yourself with, like, how smart you are or how well-liked you are and blah, 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 all the thousand things. And so, like, when none of it works because it doesn't, right, you turn to horoscopes and holes in the internet where there's, like, three other people that will support whatever weird thing you're doing. You know what I'm saying? And, but the truth is, like, if when you run into horoscopes, fortune cookies, anything that, like, they can just glean as they passed by you, the things that have been most edifying in my life are not reaffirmations of something I'm doing, but the offer of freedom from something else I was doing.
Right.
Right. Here's what needs to go. Like, your attitude needs to change. This sin needs to leave your life. Right. Like, your way of thinking needs to stop. Your pride needs to back down. Almost all of them are gifts in the negative, opposed to horoscopes and fortune cookies, which tends to go, you're doing so good, and you're going to meet your soulmate today. You know what I'm saying? I'm like,
or you're going to get a lot of money.
Or you're going to make a ton of money.
Which never happens, because you're spending your money on the publications that you're getting these horoscopes from. You are terrible at investments. You know, I'm constantly reminded that we are a creation that yearns for a creator. And, like, I found that out most because of the fact that I used to do TikTok lives. And I know that sounds dumb, but, like, I got TikTok, whatever, not famous, but, like, I had a video that blew up one time. And, like, when you got over 5,000 followers is when you were able to go live on TikTok. And I did it. I did it a couple times because I was very interested. The kind of people that showed up to, like, me at 10 o'clock at night to 2 in the morning, just hanging out, sitting up on my bed talking. And, like, not even be like, just that's all I would do. I would just set it on my bed and just sit there and chat with people. And, like, the amount of people that would just come in and just, like, want to hear something nice and, like, want to hear someone not being rude to them or mean to them or vicious. They just, like, people would flock to this and keep coming back just to hear me go, hey, I hope you're having a good day. And I hope, like, I hope things will get better for you. I'll pray for you, all this different stuff. And, like, it was insane to me. In that moment, I realized, it was like, these are lost people that are like, this is a complete and total stranger that knows nothing about me, sees my username, and that's it. And, like, the fact that that was enough connection for them to keep coming back, I'm just like, wow, this is insane. Like, this is what we're looking for, is just something to hold on to. And it plays itself out with these stupid horoscopes. People are just like, either I've been burned by people that burn me from Jesus. It's usually not actually burned by Jesus, if we're being honest about it. It's not really calling you away from things you should be doing. It's calling you away from rough stuff that's hurting you regardless. But, like, people that have been burned by the church or by people, right, are running away from
Jesus. Perception of being burned.
Exactly. That's true. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not even real. Like, it's just like, man, I was hurt by this because I really wanted to do something in my flesh. And, like, it's wrong for me. And Jesus said, don't do that. And therefore I hate him and the people that represent him. Stuff. Yeah. Oh, like, I think we all have. Yeah.
I mean, for a long period of my life, right?
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly right. And so, just, like, seeing that, it hurts me so bad that, like, this is the kind of thing that people are crying out for. Like, hey, my astrological star sign and or proximity to the moon, because the moon has, you know, pull on the ebbs and flows of the tides, and we're 75% water, so maybe the moon pulls on me too. Like, whatever, man. It's just freaking ridiculous. That's a real train of thought, by the way.
Stay away from the moon. Stop me pulling on me.
That is a real thought that some people have. They're like,
hide in my house.
I'm affected by the status or the place where the moon's at, phases, of the moon, because I am made up of 75 or 80% water, and the moon has an effect on the tides of the world, and therefore it has an effect on me. So the full moon means that it's at its largest amount of pull for me.
I have not seen near enough drunk drivers on cops given this exact excuse. Hey, man, it's 50% moon. I'm getting on pole. You know how the moon gets.
It's a waxing gibbous, buddy. You know I don't feel good about it.
You know I can't walk with the gibbous. All right, we got to move on. Okay.
Walk with the gibbous is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
They read horoscopes to determine future events. The fascination with astrology and horoscopes undoubtedly reflects people's desire for wisdom beyond their own and direction for the future. True. Astrology is the ancient belief that the person's destiny can be found in the pattern of the stars and planets at the time of one's birth. Okay, long story short on horoscopes, to pull this off, you have to have a very short memory. Because you have to remember all the times that it was not right. Right? And so, like, you read it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Every day you had full-fledged belief that it was going to go down, and then you chose to forget that none of that came to fruition when you started to read it on next Monday. Right? You have to have a very short memory to continue to let it continue to run your life. All right, here we go. A part of the six things Christians like to do that aren't biblical, tithing based on a sense of obligation. Oh, not very many people are comfortable talking about the ways they give monetarily to the church. Okay. Most would rather not talk about it at all. So many Christians look at tithing as a final issue when it's really a matter of the heart. In the Old Testament, God instructed his people to tithe, give 10% of their income to meet the needs of the religious, economic, and political system of ancient Israel. In the New Testament, Jesus set a higher standard, though it was less precise. The Bible says giving is to be done cheerfully rather than as an obligation, and not for public recognition. Too often, we treat our financial situation and other resources as though God needs them. Rather than give out of a place of gratitude and joy, we see ourselves as thrifty overseers, doling out scarce resources. We forget that every good thing comes down from our Father in heaven. Okay, here's the only reason this is tough, right? Like, it's because if God stopped by your house every Sunday to pick up this tithe, right? I don't think you would feel the same as if you were giving it to a church run by people. There's an innate mistrust of other people, which is sometimes warranted, but in actuality, it is going to do God's things. Now, Dan could probably speak to this way better than I can, but like some churches are very prayerful and very careful about how they deal with their finances and where it goes and what they get involved with, and I'm assuming some are not.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Some are not. And so like – I don't know how I don't understand tithing from like let's say 1000 to now, you know, AD. Like what? Like I know what it looks like in modernity in today's world, like where we're like keeping up an air conditioning system and an outreach bus and like all this stuff that like require our we live in a country of affluence, right? So like everything costs money here. Even the poorest person is rich compared to the rest of the world, right? So, like, we're in a different world situation. But on the whole, I think that most folks, you know, they're not involved enough in the church to know where the money's going in the first place. And so and then they frankly worship money a little bit. They don't want to give it up just to an unknown an entity where they're like, I don't know where it's going exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a big part of it, too, is that it's – it's not trusting in God's faithfulness for what he says he will bless you with. Like recognizing that like God isn't saying that he wants the 10% because like he needs it from you specifically to make things work or he won't be able to do things. That's never the situation. It's like you need to one, it's not yours in the first place. It's always been mine. Like the first 10 is mine. But on top of that, like give it and trust me. Trust me that I will cover this. I will bless you. I will show you faithfulness that you don't even believe or understand right now if you're willing to give this. You're giving up a 10% of your income being part of your safety and your finances, your safety and your situation, some of the comfort that you live in, all those different things. You're giving them up to me so that I can give them to my people, but then also so that you can recognize that the other 90% came from me too. Even though I'm calling the first 10% to be mine, the 100's mine. I'm just letting you keep the 90 as it sits. And you need to trust me on this. And I will be faithful and I will not fail you. There's not been a single situation through all of time and all of the families that God chose to show himself through, the family of Abraham and the line of that. Like he's saying, I will protect you. I will cover you. I will give you your daily bread. That literally happened to the Israelites. They woke up every morning and there's a thin sheet of manna on the ground and they go, great, this is fantastic. And they didn't even trust him with that because then they started hoarding it and going, I don't know if I'm going to have this again tomorrow, which is friggin' Israelites. But yeah, it's faithfulness in that situation of like, give this to me and trust me that I will bless you beyond your own imagination and I will cover you.
Dan, you think most people give tithing out of a sense of obligation or not at all, right? Like either they give because they're cheerful givers or they just skip it altogether.
There's I run into a whole blend of people. Some do it out of obligation. Someone told them tithe, so they do tithe, and they take it to the penny. I mean, it's like, well, that's weird. $728.16. It's like, okay, whatever, you know.
It's exactly post-tax 10%, Dan.
right. And others do it because they just love Jesus and they just like, God, I just do it, you know? And some people do it in faith. Some people do it in fear. I think we've confused the whole topic for decades, you know? I mean, like, the tithe predated the law because people, oh, but the Old Testament, this is before Old Testament. I mean, this is Abraham
tithed like Melchizedek, right?
I mean, like, he didn't even know that. He didn't know where the money was going. He didn't know where that guy was. I mean, he just,
right.
I'm giving this to God. You're just a guy. Okay, that's all I need to know. Giving it to God. And he goes on. But then we confuse things in the church age because there are less than, you know,
Reputable.
That's a good word. Okay. Try not to be too mean. People that will, you know, go out and buy jets and have wild parties at hotels with hookers and you
jets
know,
and hookers.
Hookers.
Crazy days.
What? Right. It is. They're like, and they're really well-known preachers. And you just. As I said, but the gift, I still say God honored that because they gave it to God. The other dude has to account for what he's done with it.
Yep.
So leaders who don't put that weight on them, I'm concerned about. Yeah. You know, I'll let God worry about that as well. But it sure motivates me to make sure, like, anytime I spend money, I'm like, oh, crap, this is like kingdom money, you know?
Yeah.
So like, I'm not the guy running around while spending wildly, although I just bought an office chair about 2 hours ago because I keep breaking them. So I finally bought a heavy duty one.
I'm going to go look at this, Dan. It better be reasonable.
Well, this is like a private jet.
Let's just say it's fast.
Where'd you get this golden calf office chair? It's outrageous.
Is air conditioned? I'm going to be fine.
Is that your face embroidered in the back? That's awesome.
It was really actually a lot cheaper than I expected. So, but I had some other Greek wisdom I was going to say, and I don't even remember what it was.
Dang it, Mike.
I just kept kind of going. But
now, okay, so I'm gonna ask a controversial thing here.
Yeah,
and we're gonna get heated. Hopefully
is it
not
about the Jets?
It's not about the Jets.
Okay.
Oh, remind me, I was gonna talk about Old Testament, but then go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna. So when we're talking about a tithe here, I think a lot of people take that to mean I need to give 10% of my income to the offering box of the church that I go to on Sundays.
Yeah.
Does that line up as the only way this works? Because I don't think it does. Like, I totally respect that. Mm-hmm. If that's the way that the Lord has called you to be generous, and that's the way that you plug into your church to do so, but like, are other people that like can accept money, or there are other ways that you can give to the kingdom or to kingdom work, right?
Yeah. See, I think that actually kind of is what kind of I was going to talk to is in the Old Testament. It was we talk about the tithe of the Old Testament. That was just like one of them.
Right.
There was the first fruit. Uh-huh. So there's your tithe.
Yes.
That went to make sure the priests,
you know, because the they didn't get a land. They did, the tribe of Levi wasn't given land.
But then there was like, oh, yeah, don't plow all of your land.
Uh-huh.
That's a tithe. That's a second tithe.
Right.
That's going to the poor and the widows and so forth, the needy. So I would say you tithe to your church, and then you got another tithe.
Gotcha.
Other stuff, homeless ministry, you know, feeding people. And then there was, you know, the extra tithe. I can't remember. Was it every 7 years? I'm mixing that up with something else, really. Maybe it was every 7, every 6 years.
7 is right, I think.
Where you had the big party. I mean, you saved money aside, and it all went to your party, like big Passover, like monster party. I had people invite me to those before, and I'm like,
Jubilee's 50.
Jubilee is 50, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
That's like freeing slaves and stuff like that.
To Dan's point, like, there's probably 7 feasts a year. I don't know exactly what it is, but like, you're saving for the feasts, right? Like, and you're buying the stuff. Like, you're intentionally like saving money to throw a party.
Oh no! Yeah, so we're not saying 10%. We're going at least 30.
I had it all added up once several years ago, and I thought, okay, this is ridiculous. They can eliminate it to a tithe. Everybody fights the 10%. It's like, oh, dude, you're just getting started.
That's so funny that everybody struggles with the 10%. Yeah, they're like, crap, I don't know if I can give this.
What's
much.
The average? Like 2.9 or something like percent, whatever it is. It's the last time. It's been a while, so I looked that up.
I'd be ashamed to think about how much I haven't given. But yeah,
I could only speak to this from personal experience that like I was not very faithful in the tithe for a long time. Following Jesus, and then when I was, he says, test me on this, right? It's the one thing he's like, go ahead.
Yeah, this is the one thing. See what I'll do.
And like, it couldn't have been more of a blessing.
Yeah,
like it's amazing what it allows the work that we get to be a part of because he has allowed that type of generosity. And so, like, it's amazing. Like, it's absolutely amazing. And I know, like, everybody's been there. Everybody's been, you know, the 20-something. where you just don't have even, you know, a can of beans to go between you. And you're like, look, we can't even put gas in the car except for in $5 increments. I get it. Like, I really do.
Right.
But I just wish I would have been more faithful. But I just – there's so many invitations I missed out on. Yeah. I missed out on rock moments because I was not faithful in that. Yeah. Yeah. And, like, God's not mad at me. He just invited me to be part of something that I missed.
And I think, you know, when you're in that situation, it's that tithing where you can and what you can, right? I think that sometimes there's some shame around it, right? People, especially in – depends on the church, right? They, if you're not giving your 10%, right, they question you.
Yeah.
Aren't you giving 10%, right? I've been in situations where I don't have 10%.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like, right. I mean, there's just through life and through all these things, right? And, you know, the question gets asked of you, like, your income, right? So, you know, just round number, $100,000, right? And it's $10,000 tithe. And they're like, well, that's $1,000 a month, right? Or $900 a month or whatever it works out to be. And they're like, well, where's that at? And you're like, well, I don't have $900, right? So I think that you say out of obligation, right? I think people sometimes do it out of guilt, right? Out of shame. Yeah. And they, but you're right. God will bless you, right? You do it and
God blesses you. Right. The motivation is a misunderstanding of what God's heart is for you.
I think absolutely.
He's not offering you hardship. He's trying to offer you freedom.
For sure.
Right. Yeah. And like, now the thing is, like, Western Christianity, we struggle with comfort. That's our problem, right? If we worship anything, we think that there's a level of comfort we will never be asked to go below. And we believe that there's a level of comfort that we are owed because of the society we grow up in. Now, overall, God's a good father. He loves you, right? He's not out to purposely, like, teach you horrible lessons in horrible ways just so he can prove he's big and bad, right? That's not his heart for you, right? But if I've generally has been my experience with Jesus that if I say, look, it's all on the table, and like, he will multiply and amaze you in the things that he brings freedom to you with. And like, to the point with where money doesn't own you, right? Like, it's important. It's how we do work. It's how we do business. It's how we can bless other people, right? Like, all that is true. But to the point where, like, if it were all going to be gone tomorrow, would I go, blessed be the name of the Lord? Whatever. We're fine, you know?
I mean,
then money doesn't.
Lord's going to provide, right?
Right.
I mean, hard times and
that's the big thing that I think is one of the hearts or the heart of the matter there is it's trusting in God's faithfulness that like there's no situation that like especially in this when he says I will test me on this, let me show you my generosity and it's like we that breaks and that's broken for so long for me where I'm like, God, I don't know if I can trust you in this. And I never took that to him, but every time that I did where I'm like, I don't trust you in this, but here you go. He just freaking turned it around tenfold back onto me. He's like, I told you if you would just trust me in this, that I would show up and I would show off. And I get to show my generosity to you because you're my child and I love you. And every time it was so friggin' beautiful to be a part of that I'm just like, man, this is incredible. And then, of course, I have a short memory. I go back 6 months later and I'm just like, crap, I'm back to stupid on this. And it's like, all right, Lord, I got to put this all back on the table because it appears as though I took it off the table and went, oh, man, I'm really scared. I'm really scared about this stuff. And he's like, I knew you were going to do it. Let's put it back on there. I'm like, okay. And he's like, and blessing and blessing and blessing and blessing and blessing.
Number five on six things Christians like to do that aren't biblical. Number four
I was gonna say, we're on four.
Blame karma. Karma is a theological concept found in Buddhist and Hindu religions. Okay, here's the thing. I love this because I never do this, actually. People are always like, man, what goes around comes around. Yeah, this is not, I don't like.
Justin Timberlake said that, man, come on.
I mean, he would know. Justin Timberlake knows all kinds of stuff.
He would know.
But like, people be like, man, we really lucked out on this. I'm like, I don't believe in that. Like, I literally don't believe in luck at all. So I don't want to attribute it to something I've done. I'm just saying that, this turned out great, and I had nothing to do with it. That's probably the long short of it.
It's hard not to say good luck, though.
I know it is. And it's not like God's like, don't be wishing people luck. this is a misuse of what the Lord thinks, you know. But like, because it's just a phrase to us. We're not like,
yeah.
I hope the cosmic powers align in a certain array to create a situation for you.
Right.
Like, that's not what we actually mean, right? Like, we're just saying, good luck, man. I hope things go well is what we mean. You know, but overall.
I hope you don't make dumb decisions. You trust the Lord on it, right? Like, let's be real. That's what
luck
we want
to
say.
Luck seems to be directly affected by how dumb I am most of the time. That's crazy.
Yeah. The most accurate encouragement should be, don't be an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
Out the door, you know?
Make generally all right choices. Your luck is going to go through the roof. I promise you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever actually heard a Christian say that. I have heard people who consider themselves spiritual and include Christianity as an okay thing say things like that.
It's all going to come around, Dan.
Yeah,
it's all going to come back around. Align your chakras.
I do struggle with people that are like, sending you good vibes. I'm like, what's that supposed to do for
me? Yeah, good vibes don't do
vibes.
Nothing.
I don't want no vibes.
Right.
What are you, the moon? I can't walk with this gibbous.
Yeah, the gibbous already screwed me this year. I don't want none of your vibes. Here's the thing. I just
imagine someone going, ooh, at that point in time, and it's just as effective.
It's classic. Peter goes, where else are we going to go?
Oh, I'm super excited for AI
Peter
to
goes,
grab a hold
where
of
where else are we going to go? You know, and like, I find that true with my walk with Jesus and all the time.
Yeah.
People are like, they're offering vibes. And I'm like, vibes can't do nothing. I know a God. This is the only place I can go with this situation.
Right.
And so, like, your good thoughts, like, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but it ain't helpful. You know what I'm saying? It's like a guy throwing a paper towel in a mud puddle and going, here, this is helpful. I'm like, I see you were trying to be nice, but you literally accomplished nothing and burned a paper towel. That no one's going to be able to use for anything.
Well, the unfortunate flip of this coin, though, is the amount of Christians that say thoughts and prayers with you and then do absolutely nothing with that.
Yeah, they say it, but they don't do it.
Exactly, right?
Like,
right, exactly. Thoughts and prayers.
They thought of them.
Right, exactly. I thought of you, and I prayed about it, and it's like, oh, cool. Do I trust that at all?
Sucks to be you.
Like, did you pray about it?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Or you just wrote it on Facebook, right?
I'm like, I don't trust that at all. Yeah. I used to do that all the time, and I learned from Mike Foos that you don't type praying and text that out until after you've done it.
Yeah.
It should be
prayed.
That
has been shame to me forever.
That's right. We only get to do it in the past.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I mean, there ain't no...
Yeah, I pray.
Because you can't
that.
Type that while you're actively doing it, right?
Exactly.
Like, let's be real.
Yeah. God's like, you trying to worship the gibbous with that. Don't be following me.
Trying to worship the gibbous.
Number five. Six things Christians do, something or other.
just whittling down more and
number
more as
five,
we go.
Six things that Christians like to do that aren't biblical.
Yeah.
Number five, believing in superstition. Superstition is based on the faith of an object having magical powers. Another word for superstition is, quotes, idolatry. Burn. The Bible does not support the idea of things occurring by chance, but nothing is done outside of God's sovereign control. Now, here's the thing. You want to weigh things correctly in your walk with Christ. That is a true statement. Nothing is done outside of God's sovereign control.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He does not cause everything. He is not the orchestrator of evil things.
Nope.
But he did allow it. He did allow it.
Sure.
And sometimes that's very hard to wrestle with.
Well, I mean, yeah. We live in a fallen world because of our own choices.
That's right. That's right. And so, like, I've heard actually a lot of people come to a crux of their faith. Like it's the standard question. Why do good things happen or bad things happen to good people? Right? And, like...
Yeah, why do Job's kids die?
Right? And we have,
like,
we have standard answers that are not helpful in the sand. Right? When your whole world's falling apart and people are like, look, we live in a fallen world and God has to allow free choice to allow for love to be an actual choice of yours for it to be genuine. Right? Like, and we broke a promise that we made God as humanity, and he's rescuing it. We have this whole thing, right? But, like, when a car accident happens, and, like, there's no discernible reason for, like, this is not comforting at the time, right? This is a very hard thing to wrestle with because, like, in our belief, God could have stopped it. He could have, right? And sometimes he does, and sometimes he does not. And, like, having a hope and a faith in Christ, when you have had rock moments, this becomes easier to deal with. Like, when you have a relationship with God, I wouldn't say easier to deal with, but, like, you know that where your hope comes from, right? Mm-hmm. And you know that there's nowhere else you're going to go. Because even if you want to be mad at God for right now, which he has more than enough shoulder to take, he is not afraid of your anger, right? When you sit down and think about it and go, well, if God, maybe I'm mad at God, or maybe God isn't real, I'm going to switch to what? Right. Well, here's what I will do. I'll go back to the horoscopes. They always did me right.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, once again, it's Peter that says, where else are we going to go? Where else would we go? This is the only gig in town. You know, like, this is the thing to do. This is where our hope comes from. And so, like, I could see people, not as much superstition things, but, like, you, I've wrestled with that myself. When a thing has happened or a situation has shown up and people are looking for comfort who don't know Jesus, and I'm like, I could tell you that, like, God knows all about this, but, like, you're just going to get more mad. You know, right. You're like, if your God is so good, why did he allow? And I'm like, I can't speak on his behalf in this particular situation. Right. I know that he wants to walk through this with you. But, like, that's not comforting to people who don't know him, you know?
Gosh. Yeah, I struggled with that, you know, going as I was coming to faith, right? And there's a couple songs come on the radio, right? Corey Asbury has a song that's kind, right?
Yes.
And it's all about that, right? Sometimes babies die. Sometimes marriages don't work, right? Yep. Obviously, I went through that, right? So, yep. And there was a lot of guilt and a lot of things around that. And so I had that questioning moment, right? Of,
why
is this all happening to me?
Yep.
Right? And then, but it takes a little bit of self-reflection to be like,
yeah, I might have had some.
Maybe I caused all of this, right?
I'm not that good.
Not everything, but, you know, yeah. I definitely had a hand in it, some choices, you know, some. Maybe some punishment for some sins that were out there.
Or some consequences for sins, right?
Yeah, you know? Maybe not punishment's not the right word, right? Consequences, right? Because there's always going to be a consequence for every sin that you commit, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just...
Yeah. Yeah. I think when you get to the point where you can start looking at those questions and go, you can walk through that and go, my faith hasn't changed. This is still hard. And this still weighs something, you know? But, like, my faith is exactly... My hope is in the Lord, and that's it.
Right.
And so, yeah, and believing in magic beans or whatever is a mistake.
Right.
So that's, I mean, we could just.
I mean, I do like the number four, though.
Yeah, I mean.
But I don't know if I'm superstitious about it, but.
No. Yeah, you know. Stevie Wonder really reminds me all the time of how very idolatrous things are. Very idolatrous writing on the wall.
Okay, last one. Six things that the Christians like to do that are not in the Bible.
Oh, no.
Drinking to get the drunk.
Oof. That's it.
Hold on. Getting drunk is prohibited in the Bible. Prohibited. Oof. While it is a sin, for centuries, there has been significant debate around the topic of drinking in moderation, and even more in recent years. With the shift towards postmodernism, practices that were once discouraged by the Christian community have been embraced and even promoted. Whether it be alcohol, drugs, or some other addictive behavior, Jesus said, "You cannot serve two masters." When we get drunk, we are serving a master other than the Lord. Choosing to follow Jesus means choosing against our old sinful patterns and lifestyle. 1 Corinthians 6:10 lists drunkards among those who will not inherit the kingdom of God. The Bible is the single most important book ever written. It is an eyewitness account of historical events of such magnitude that they have literally shaped the world in which we live. Without the Bible, the Western world and a good deal of the Eastern world would be completely different today than if the events of the book had never occurred. The Bible is remarkable. It is unique. No other book has any such credentials, and no other book even comes close. Our words and actions must align with our faith. The drinking to get drunk. Most Christians are like, yeah, this is fine. I pull this off all the time.
I don't know if I've met any of those cartoon characters. I hate to say it like that. Like, the Christians that I know, or the people that know Jesus that I know, they get drunk, usually know that they're messing up and that that's sinful. Like, I haven't met one Christian drunkard apologetic.
Now, like, I've ran into,
or apologist, excuse me.
I've ran into some good Christian folks that I knew that weren't paying attention to what they were doing.
Yeah, right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And they're, or like someone just, you know, they don't drink.
I mean, sometimes you let your stupid get off the leash.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And so, like, I think if your intention, because, like, what's the point of getting drunk, right? Most people.
Exactly,
like,
right.
Like, when you're asked.
You're running to something or running from something.
Yeah, exactly. For you're sure. running to or running from.
And so, it's not God.
Yeah,
that's the
and
problem.
It's not an enhancement of your current life. It's a burial.
Right.
You're like, I just want to forget what's going on. I don't want to feel the way I feel. This is every addiction, right? And everything that we're running to. And so, like, you could call it drinking to get drunk. I could call it sitting there smoking three packs a day.
And I could call it eating so much that I forget my problems.
Right. And so, like, this is one of the things in the Bible that, like, can we take that as an archetype? Mm-hmm. Opposed to just God hates alcohol, like Jesus.
Yep. Or
Jesus
metaphorical.
That's right. Jesus had some. Like, he brought this whole point up when he was talking about them comparing.
And he made it.
Yeah.
I mean,
when he's talking about the Pharisees giving John a hard time for not drinking and not hanging out with sinners, and Jesus goes, and then here I show up drinking a little, obviously, and then hanging out with sinners, and you got a problem with me too, you know? And so, like, I think we can just finally put this fundamentalist thought that, like, alcohol's not – that's not what we're talking about here.
No.
We're talking about your hope is in something else. Yeah. Your hope is that this alcohol will change the way you're thinking, feeling, doing, whatever. Same thing with the drugs. Same thing with the smoking.
I think that alcohol is just the most visible of all of them, right? I mean, it's the one you see. It's the one.
And readily accessible.
Right. Absolutely. It's readily,
probably one of the frowned upon societal sins, right? But we're not saying drinking is a sin. What we're saying is you're running – you're Peter, but you're going – where else would we go? Jim Beam. That's where else we'd go. We can try that.
You're running to something that isn't God for your idol or for your fulfillment or for your forgetting what's happening in your life. Mm-hmm. You are losing control of higher function, higher thought, things like that. You're allowing yourself into a world in which you are very much have a higher potential of making even worse decisions in drunkenness, things like that. Rage and anger come out, jealousy and lust come out, all those kind of things come out through drunkenness, and it appears to be this gateway to that because of the inhibitions that you let go and because of the things that you're allowing your mind to lack and the defense that falls because you're given into alcohol that much. It's idolatry, and it's going too far to allow yourself in other things.
I'm teaching through Romans right now, and it's a blast. I mean, you have him setting up, he spends a considerable amount of time setting up that we're just, you know, losers, you know, we're awful. We're failures. We're rebellious. We've done it all, you know, all the stuff. We're worthy of the wrath of God, and it's coming. It's coming. The hammer's going to come down. And then somewhere in there he says, well, but Jesus, right?
Yeah.
But Jesus came, justification, forgiveness, purity, holiness. You know, he changed everything. And it gets into the whole definition of faith and talking about that in chapter 4 and Abraham and everything. Then he hits chapter 5, and he's like, oh, by the way, that righteousness we have in Jesus gives us peace with God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the peace that
wow.
We're not grasping. I don't have peace, so I need a drink, or I need a bite, or I need a whatever, you know. And once we realize the peace that the wrath has turned away, the whole propitiation thing, right? Turning away of wrath. Once we understand the wrath is no longer for me, that Jesus took it and he loves me and he did all this for me. And I have gone from a wrath centered relationship to a faith and grace centered relationship, peace centered relationship. It changes everything. It's sad that it's the people who do that haven't grasped the peace yet.
Right.
And it's right there. It's waiting for
them. Gosh, Dan, I've never thought of it like that. To be such a way to color the shamefulness of the sin that I commit and the sin and the shamefulness of the peace that I'm not holding on to. And it, like, I think I miss that a lot of recognizing that, like, I'm very good at being my own judge and shame bringer.
Right.
I'm very good at like laying myself bare and like going in front of the cross and going, I don't deserve this and stuff like that. I'm awful at the flip side of that, of recognizing that like the whole point of Jesus dying was atonement for that wrath, for the fact that God no longer sees my sin because it's covered by that blood. And like, if I were only to grasp the peace of that truth, of the fact that through Christ I can be in the garden with my Father, like, I don't have to continue to stay in the shame cycles that I get into and the sinfulness that comes from that, if I just learn to live in the garden.
Yeah, yeah. I don't need the alcohol. I don't need to run to pornography. I don't need to run to food. I don't need to run to all the stuff, the drugs, or, you know, all of them.
I can just run to God, who's literally hands wide
right
open
there,
holding them for me.
Yeah.
How many people's life do you – like, I'm in Bouva camp. Like, I struggle with this a lot, right? In fact, one of the things I was reading this morning is it was talking about the presence of the Holy Spirit. And when Jesus got baptized and he said, this is my Son, who I am well pleased, right?
Huffing.
And yeah, and then it said, like – do you believe that God feels that about you,
yeah,
right? That this is my Son,
right,
in who I am well pleased. You know,
right.
I'm like, no, no,
before
no, I don't.
Teaching,
you know what I thought about last night?
Was.
No, he's not happy.
Yeah,
he's kind of a son. He's
yes,
because right. I'm a sinner.
Because it feels like you're always on the edge of grace.
Yeah,
right,
mm-hmm.
Right. Like because
just
like
wish you could get closer.
Like you know you don't deserve it, and you think he is so gracious and so amazing that he would continue to offer it. And, like, you just can't get past the door of the grace to get into the peace, right? Mm-hmm. Exactly what Dan is talking about. Like you just you feel more like it's because it's a justice thing, right? In your mind, the justice, if God is justice and mercy, the justice is he was super generous to give me the grace and die for my sins. But I, what kind of arrogant boob would walk past the grace into the peace, knowing full well that the non-grace behavior, I'm going to do that again. I'm going to go walk right back out the door and act like none of this happened. Be a fool, come back, and like God's like, yeah, I want you to take the grace, but I want you to abide in me as you move on to the peace, right? There's what point is there as being a vine or branch on a vine if you don't take the characteristics of the vine, right? Like you're basically setting yourself up as a separate vine. You know, that just happens.
You're just a twig on the ground, by the way.
You happen to know a really good other vine that's cool and that like brings you to parties.
Hey,
and
I'm close to a good vine.
That's right. That will vouch for you if push comes to shove. You know, but like you're not abiding there. You know, and like I don't know if it's a work of the Holy Spirit or if it's a laying down of pride. It sounds odd to make that a pride argument, but like, I mean, I've been following Jesus a long time, and I still struggle getting there. I still struggle to get to the peace, right? Every morning is a, God, I can't believe you're allowing me to even have this conversation with you,
man,
you know?
It's just, I say it all the time, right? Man, I'm not worthy of this at all. I don't know why you're letting me talk to you, right? Like,
and I think,
true, right? Imagine like, saying that to Jesus.
What? Right.
Like post-crucifixion Jesus, you look at him and go, I can't even talk to you. I'm so broken and so sinful. And he's like, I took it all. Yeah. Like it already happened.
He's already paid for it.
I already paid for every
like your
bit
tabs.
Of it. Right, exactly. It's like somebody already paid your bill at the restaurant and you keep fighting to give him your credit card. It's like, stop it. Like, what is happening? What are you doing? This is paid for. It's like, no, take my money. Your money is no good. And you do not have enough money to buy this dinner. Please take my card.
Jesus, I'm going to order more food. I know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly.
I know.
Right. Like, hey, I know this is already way out of my budget, but like, I cannot stop myself from ordering more. And he's like, yeah, I know. I already paid it. It's like, but I'm going to pay it. And like, I will not accept that you've already done this. And he's like, well, that's ridiculous because it's already done. And I want you to be like, we got a party to go to after this and you want to be stuck here with a bill. I'm like, no, we got to go.
So here's the problem though. The roll up is when you're stuck at Grace's door. You don't pray like you should pray.
Right.
You don't, you're not free to follow the Holy Spirit. You don't trust the voice that you hear. You don't hear his voice because you're standing so far away from the joy and peace field to hear him speaking. You question everything because you are fully aware that you should probably only get one toe in the door before they see you for who you are and give you the boots key.
You deserve to have a toe in the door.
And so like this really sucks, right? Because I don't know how many guys I know that like love and follow Jesus and they're stuck standing at Grace's door.
Yeah.
And the whole time God is offering for peace and joy to let it go. Just let it go, man. Like, stop dragging your mess in here and acting like this room needs to be half painted with your blood. It doesn't, right? It was completely painted in his. So let's just quit it, because then you start making moves that people who aren't so well guarded would make.
I'm asking for a friend. How do you get there?
I think that is a great question.
Right? I mean,
that is a great question.
Yeah.
Being
in the Word, right? Being in the Word, being in the presence of God, being in that state of mind, right?
Well, I don't know that it's an effort. It's not an effort thing. Like, this is a work of the Holy Spirit, right? And so this is a submitting to God thing. And like, to your point, do I think that means that setting apart time to be in his presence? Yes, I think that's definitely what that means. I think that means reading his Word. I think that means praying past your uncomfortableness, right? Where you're like, where you listen to, I listen to my wife pray nowadays, and I'm like, she prays for such insightful things. Like, the insightful things that she prays for, like, amaze me. And I'm like, my mind does not think that way. And like, some of it is because prayer is a practice and prayer is a discipline. And some of it is the Holy Spirit working in her that God gives her a heart like his, where mine is stuck at Grace's door going, God, I'd pray for Tom, but I don't want to like step on your toes on what you're going to do in Tom's life.
Right.
So like maybe he should have the job, maybe he shouldn't have the job. Just do whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like this is my prayer because I'm afraid of standing in his way. Mm-hmm. Where my wife will be like,
she's like, I'm coming right alongside you, God. Right? I'm right
she's
here.
She's like, Tom, I pray that this job will be yours, and not only when you walk that through that door, you'll be reminded of all the things that God did to bring you here, and you will feel that in your soul. As you meet your new boss, and whether he turns out to be your boss, your coworker, or just a guy that you met, that you walk out blessed for have been there. And I'm like, I'd have been like, good luck, Tom. You know, yeah. I hope karma helps you. It's a waning gibbous.
I think there's a level that I hit because like I try and balance this of like living in the peace and the grace of our loving Father. And then living and understanding the fearfulness that I should have at the vengeance that he absolutely deserves to take. And like, I get so caught up on the, yeah, absolutely. God should judge me and God should like absolutely bring his vengeance on me. And I rarely look over, cause like I you read the Old Testament, this is a wrathful and vengeful mm-hmm. God. This is like, you
read
guys,
the New Testament.
Up.
Yeah.
Read
the
New Revelation,
yeah, exactly, right?
It's like, it lays it out.
Like, yeah, we messed this up, Romans. God. We made some calves. 3,000 of you are now dead because you did not call after me and cry after me. I'm still going to bless this family.
Yeah.
But like all 3,000 of them are gone. And like, this is this, like, you are not falling in line with this. This is a covenant that you will be crushed under because you cannot hold up to it. And the blood that you have, as we're talking of a sacrificial system, you're not a perfect lamb. So your blood means nothing. It just, at the end of it, means that you no longer have life and the wages of sin is death. That's exactly right. But then we've got Jesus that flips all of this on its head. And mm-hmm. like, the blood that was perfect was already spilled. It was completely covered, and we were atoned for if we believe in the one who sent him, right? And like, I'm so gung-ho and stuck on the vengeful Father that I should be fearful of, and I rarely feel like I should be in that peaceful place where I'm like, I say the words, and I know about Christ, and I know about the sacrifice, but I know of my own sinful nature, and I can't stop living in muck, and I can't get out of the mud.
Yeah, I think here's what I'm hearing, and I'll try to play, you know, psychiatrist or something.
Sure.
Because we're not, there's a tweak. There's a tweak somewhere we have to make. Because we're understanding peace, we're understanding grace, we're understanding all that, but we're still talking about work. You know, we're still like, if I just pray enough, if I just force myself to get it, if I just do good, you know, I mean, because we're wired that way, rather than starting with, no, we're already there. We're just there.
Yeah.
He's already done it. Peace. You got peace. The peace of God's right there. And then saying, man, this is so peaceful. I just want to pray. You know, I mean, it's a complete flip, brother. I got to pray so I get peace. It's like, no, you already got peace.
Yeah, walk
you don't
in
see it.
It. Yeah,
bills been paid.
Doesn't that just make you want to pray?
Right.
Doesn't that just make you want to serve? Doesn't that want to make you dive into kingdom work? Mm-hmm. Because man, he's done it all. I've got it all. I've got everything. I don't deserve any. Yeah, right. And it's just a flip. It's just a flip. I think that we got to make.
Oh gosh, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah, it's already been done.
Right.
You're sitting there staring.
Just take it.
At a car, and you're like. There's not a car there. There is definitely a car.
Right, exactly.
If I work hard enough, there will be one. I know it.
When you say it's a pride issue, like that strikes me because like, am I mistrusting in the faithfulness of God that he already did what he said he was going to do? And like, I think that might be a part of it where I'm like, but I'm too far. Like I'm not, everybody, Jesus, all of them, but not me. It can't be me. You could not have covered all the awful that I am.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's, I'll go back to that song I talked about, right? He says in there, I think Amazing Grace was meant for everybody else.
Yeah.
Right.
Amen for me.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Like, and right? I celebrate that for everybody. I celebrate that Jesus was a loving God and became man and died in exactly that way, in the perfect way to atone for all of it. And I'm so thankful for everyone around me that gets that. But like, Lord, it can't be for me.
I think about it. Like to Dan's point, think how much him-hawing and shuffling and doubting and like ridiculous walk-arounds you've been doing as you've tried to follow Jesus with all of your might.
Yeah.
And, like, and how much of it...
for not.
Right, for, like, anxiety and worry and pride and mess, and you brought all that in here.
Right.
Right? And he's like, just stop it already. Like,
it's so funny because it's such a misunderstanding that you even have any, like, iota of power to clean yourself mm-hmm. enough to show up to God.
Right.
Like through every story that we hear of humans attempting to clean up their own lives or clean up themselves, every one of them fell. Adam, all of the people in Babel, Abraham, David, every one of them did like these things that they thought were cleaning themselves in front of God, and every single attempt fell drastically short of anything close to perfection that needs to be perfection for it to be worthy of God. Mm-hmm. And that's why he literally, I mean, what is Jesus's, Yeshua literally is like, Yahweh brings us salvation or becomes salvation. Like, he becoming man is the only way that man could ever come close to allowing for perfection and for sin to be covered. He already did it. He did it thousands of years ago. And the fact that we're here talking about it in this radio show tonight means that we know that it happened thousands of years ago, but we're not acting like it. At least right. I'm not for sure.
Yeah. Dan's advice is just walk in it. Stop it.
Truth.
Yeah.
Pray because you're already in the peace, not because you're trying to get to it.
Yeah, he knew all that when he died. We were still sinners. He went to the cross, right?
Yeah.
And we're like, well, no, I still got more to do, and you got nothing.
Oh, gosh.
All these Bible verses are making all kinds of sense now. Boy, Dan, you're really straightening this out. This other stuff, I just thought it was blah, 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 blah. Now it turns out he means every word.
And we got our way here through six things that Christians do that aren't from the Bible.
Yeah, stay out that whiskey, friend. Or just take a little sip of it. Yeah.
Just take a little sip.
All right, you're listening to Life from the Path on lifefromthepath.org. We better wrap this thing up. I don't even know how long the show is. I don't know how to run into this stuff. The timers is going. I have no idea how long we've been on here.
Yeah, if you have anything that you want to talk about, whether it's a thing that you do that isn't from the Bible, because I'd be surprised if there were any more than the six or anything like that.
That's true.
There's no way that there's anything more than the six.
Those are basically the six major sins.
Right. It's the Ten Commandments and the six things that you do that's outside of the Bible. But if you have anything that you want to talk about that might also be outside of the Bible, feel free to hit us up on the Bob Eisenhower Live from the Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Once again, that is 515-517-0085. Call or text, and I promise we will not answer if you call. So if you're looking to like talk to us live, it won't happen. You're not that cool, and we're not that great. So like, go ahead and call and leave a voicemail or a text. It's going to come to my phone, and so like, it'll feel like you're texting me, and I'll feel good about myself. And so I'll appreciate that if you do that. This is
has
a little
anyone
bit more
written the complaint line lately?
That, I think Dan did once.
What?
I did
that
once.
That was an unlisted number.
And I think one of you guys' kids did once. Yeah. I think that is the entire Bob Eisenhower Live from the Path complaint line.
Well, here's the deal, though. Here's the error with your request is they don't think they're doing unbiblical things.
Right.
So what we need is a video of their full day.
Oh,
so yes. We can look at it.
Right.
And then we can determine what they're doing that's unbiblical.
Text us a video feed of you for 24 hours. Don't do that. Skip the bathroom. Skip the bathroom.
Never mind.
Yeah, we don't want that at all.
Maybe
send us an essay of why you think you've never done anything outside of the Bible, and then we will critique that and go, wow, you've lived a great life. It must be nice to be in peace and being prayerful about it. That's, again, 515-517-0085.
Okay, Bubba, we need to do Live from the Past.
I was going
to
say, what do you want from me? Because I had a couple things set up. We can do one Dear Life from the Path.
Okay.
Dear Life from the Path. I'm a middle-aged... Oh, no. Never mind.
Thank you.
We don't care.
You got to read them beforehand.
I did. I just didn't. Yep. Oh, wow. Okay. You give me a second here, because the two I had... Dear Abby. Dear Live from the Path. Holy cats.
What?
We're failing this. I'm a 67-year-old father to a wonderful daughter. She has decided to stay with her boyfriend, who recently got out of jail for stealing $200,000 from his grandparents.
Wow.
Because of this, I do not want to leave her a large sum of money when I pass. As of now, she would inherit it. My problem is, how do I tell her I'm removing her from my will? If I tell her, I'm scared she will hate me and end our relationship.
You will.
But if I don't tell her now, she'll be so disappointed when that time does come. Her boyfriend has already stolen $200 from her checking account since his release from jail. He has a gambling problem but continues to deny it. I cannot take the chance that he wouldn't steal from her on a much bigger scale. She stands to inherit more than $400,000. How do I tell her? I know I can set up a trust for her, but telling her my decision is the difficult problem.
Okay, so a question for the group. Should people's misuse of a gift be a reason to not give a gift?
Oh, that's a deep one.
Let's say
within so reason, I feel like it's fine to
thought that they're going to misuse, or is there like,
well, so you know, let's take the obvious off the table. Like, yeah, let's say that like, they're not going to physically hurt themselves, right? Like, you're not gifting weapons or, you know, what, or drugs or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, but like, if people...
Weird if you gave a heroin inheritance. Yeah.
Like, they gave me a... they gave me an 8-ball of the fresh Peruvian. I don't know what happened. Do and good things
my,
with
and
it.
And to my granddaughter, I give 6 kilos of Colombian Bam Bam.
So, like, okay, we take this tact, though, like, when dealing with specific people in our own lives, yeah, like, look, I won't help you do everything. I'll help you do good things.
Right. Yeah.
So
I'm not going to help you hurt yourself.
Right. So, but if so, in this man's perspective, that if he leaves this money, like, frankly, that amount of money ruined just about a good person. That's a lot of money. Yeah. People are going to act foolish with it. You know, even good people, you know. So, like, if she's struggling to see the world correctly or make good decisions, the worst she's going to do is burn it all, and mm-hmm, it's just gone. Or that dude steals it from her.
Right.
Right.
And then it's like all she's done is lose her grandfather.
Right. And so, like, now her grandpa – but if in her current form of looking at the world, she's going to really be mad at him for pulling the cash. Right? He's going to lose any relationship he has with her if he does this preemptively.
But he can't not tell her.
Can he not tell her?
Well, I mean, like,
here's the deal.
Do you want to hate you when you're alive or when you're dead?
What?
I mean,
when I'm dead, I'm be honest. When I'm dead, I'm with Jesus.
Yeah.
My granddaughter hates me. I tried my best. I'm gonna do my best to be the kind of grandfather that a granddaughter would enjoy and love.
Wasn't it his daughter?
What?
Does it make a difference if it's his daughter?
Oh, like if it's his direct descendant?
I think he said it was.
I mean, I thought he said granddaughter, but I could have been wrong.
Maybe not.
I mean, I don't know.
I mean, like, my dad's whore stole inheritance.
I know.
And she just didn't tell me about it till she died. You know, that was probably $1 million. I mean.
Yeah, like, my step-grandfather stole everything from my grandmother, and my brother and I didn't get a thing.
He's like.
He didn't even tell her she was dead until after
I don't
it
hate her any less now than I did before. I mean, or more. I mean, I don't. That's between her and God, how I look at it. And. Yeah.
Yeah, don't bank on inheritance.
It's not mine. I mean, it wasn't mine to, but.
Yeah, at least you're not still carrying it around, Dan, with anger and upsetness.
Why? What would make you say that?
I mean, I get it, though. It's not
understandable.
He paid her for sex as a whore, right? While he was married to my mom. I don't know what else to call her.
I mean, okay.
Yeah.
The preacher did call her a fine Christian woman, but.
And this is why we're on the internet. That's the 515-517-0085, the Christian podcast, Live from the Path.
Well, I mean, that's in the Bible, too.
There's words. First descriptive words.
No, you're definitely walking in freedom, Dan.
Yeah. Give me some of that bourbon.
Oh, boy.
My piece is leaving.
Pray because I'm in it.
Ben, yeah, no, you're going to have to edit this one.
Why? What's it?
No,
I think she has to tell him. I mean, life is life, so whatever.
I think
he doesn't have to tell her, huh?
Here, ma'am. Here's the deal. Like,
her money.
I think grandpa can have a conversation. Like, if she's an adult granddaughter, like, plenty of grandparents have conversations with their adult grandchildren and just mm-hmm. be like, hey, like, hear me out here. I think there's a human way to have this conversation that goes like, let's be honest about the situation you're in. Can we honestly recognize that the guy you're dating just got out of prison because he stole $200,000? Yes or no? She goes, well, yes, but he's changed. I go, okay, great. And since he got out of prison, he's stolen money from your bank account. That the only reason I would know that is you told somebody. Guessing you told mom and dad, then mom and dad maybe passed it on to grandpa. Right? Okay. So we're dealing in right things here and real things now. Now, you, being open and honest about the fact that that's the person you're choosing to date, tell me how I should feel about that. As someone who stands to gain this sum of money from me, talk to me about my uncomfortability with this, because what I don't want is to hand you something that is going to hurt you.
How can it hurt me? You should trust me with this money. I'll make sure it goes to good places. Trust me.
She's not shown that at all. She's probably openly apologizing for this.
You asked what she would say. I'm telling you, that's what she would say.
Fine.
There's no winning in it. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. But like, this is a real conversation. This is not a relationship ending at the beginning conversation. And if she chooses to take it that way at that point in time, you were a human being and tried to have a conversation with your granddaughter, which I think is understandable to have.
I mean, isn't this the way a will works? It's kind of the big reveal. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, I never knew any of my inheritance.
That's what I'm saying. Like, to dance
a lawyer like, contacted me and said, hey, here's a couple grand. Like,
just keep it to yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like, just let her find out after you're gone. She can be all kinds of mad if she wants to be.
Yeah. But I think there's a more important thing here, which is maybe your granddaughter has no idea what she's worth. Like, maybe that's a problem. She's with a dude like this, and like, you may not have the whole story, and he could be in a very redemptive place in his life, and he's trying to make good moves. And I think that's great. I don't think that she needs to, you know, be dating this idiot and, like, marry him as an idiot and just go, oh, God's really going to fix him, because that's not usually how great marriages start. But
right.
I'm just saying, like, there's a human level to this. It's not just about exchange of money and this guy's an idiot. It's about the fact that this is your granddaughter, and hopefully, more than just because an inheritance could be going to this stupid boyfriend, you should care about the fact that she may be dating an idiot that is not good enough for her. Yeah. Or maybe she's a rough person too, and then the conversation is, all of you need Jesus.
Right, right. But I would protect both. If it was my situation, I would protect both of them by just having them not have it, or having some type of very strict disbursement that was under control of a third party.
And he said he'd set up a trust. But he wants to speak to her about it. Or figure out if he needs to or not, which I can understand both those things.
Like, I keep thinking it's a she.
There's practical things there. Yeah. There's practical things of like, this is the right way to set up the account. You can do that all legally, all the different stuff.
All the money goes to a counseling center, and now you go there.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
Free counseling for life.
Yes, exactly. Here's $400,000. You will never have to pay for a psychiatrist.
Especially if you're with this guy, you'll need a lot of it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and $400,000 in a gambling problem can get you in a lot of trouble.
And go quick, too.
Yeah, exactly, right. That's a rough weekend at Vegas. Or a rough day at Vegas, to be honest with you, depending on what table you're at. Like, you can lose 400 grand pretty quick. And if you lose 400 grand to the wrong people, you can lose a lot more than the 400 grand pretty quick. That's all I'm saying. Not like I've dealt with loan sharks or anything. I'm just saying I've seen movies.
I've seen the show.
Just in case you think that I had a run in Vegas one time and I had to, like, avoid getting my legs broken. The only time I was in Vegas, I was 11 years old, and I went and saw the Pirates of the Caribbean thing on the side of the road. It was really cool.
Sounds awesome.
515-517-0085. If you want to talk to me about Pirates of the Caribbean, I will answer.
What was the secular advice?
Oh, secular advice.
Jeez, amateur.
Well, says the guy who's had to say multiple times, are we even running right now? Secular says, you didn't say that you are in ill health. You could live another 15 or 20 years, and if you do, your daughter could have wised up and chosen a more suitable partner by then. Oh, maybe it's daughter and not granddaughter. Sorry. You remember right. I do think your idea of creating a trust for her is a good one. However, I see no reason why you should discuss that plan with her now. If you feel the need to explain, do it in a letter to be given to her at the time of your demise. Thanks, Secular. Always good. Yeah, set up the trust and then put out a letter that's super humanizing. Cool. Okay. That's what I got, Mike.
Okay, you've been listening to Life from the Path. I was going to try to rig up the ending song, but, it's so far it's going terrible. So anyway, thank you for listening to the show tonight. Cody, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Okay. Yeah, you got an open invitation to come on back. Hopefully we'll talk about how to leave people out of wills more often. So that'll be good.
Yeah.
Do I have an open invitation to come back? I feel like that's never been said to me.
No.
Do I just keep showing up and you guys every week are like, man.
No, my first church was that way for 6 years. I just showed up to preach and they never told me not to come back. I just kept coming. I was in college. I'm like, this is great. And they kept going.
Dan, for a second, I don't know why. I thought you were saying that to me about the church that I was in of yours. And I was like, wait,
no.
Did you just not invite me to that church? And I just kept showing up for the first 6 years?
Yeah,
I think that would have been 9 to 15, by the way, just a heads up.
I thought you were telling a joke, Dan.
No, it was real.
Oh, that's awesome.
20 years old. Hey, can you preach a Sunday? Sure. And I just kept coming back.
All right, man. Well, as Ben would say, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path. Boom.